Good evening, and welcome to The Role of Youth in Building Pluralistic Society. I'm Debbie Ehrman, Associate Director for Library Experiences at the City Library. I'd also like to extend a warm welcome to those listening to this program on KCPW Radio. Tonight's program is the first session in the City Library's four-day event, Cultural and Religious Pluralism Today, Building Civility and Unity. A full description of the programs related to this event, a list of sponsors, funding sources, and community partners can be found on the library's website at slcpl.org/pluralism. Tonight's program was generously sponsored by the Office of Spiritual Life, Westminster College, and the Inclusion Center, Westminster College. Keila Zamora from the Inclusion Center will introduce tonight's program, and Jan Saeed from the Office of Spiritual Life will moderate the panel discussion around our topic. Keila Zamora is the Executive Director of the Inclusion Center for Community and Justice. Keila has been involved with the Inclusion Center since 1992, when he attended their Human Relationship Leadership Camp, Anytown. Keila is at his best when developing dialogues to foster self-awareness and creating inclusive solutions to divisive issues. His skill set is unique in that he has facilitated dialogues with over 100,000 people from many different social groups. As part of the Inclusion Center staff, he has been awarded several honors, including the Pete Suazo Social Justice Award, the Equality Utah Award, and the School of Social Work at the University of Utah's Outstanding Young Alumni Award, among many others. I'd like to turn it over now to Keila.
Thank you, Debbie, and thank you to Salt Lake Library for hosting this very important conference during the 10th anniversary of 9/11. I'm here today to introduce you to our moderator for today's panel. And the person to my right is Jan Saeed. I have a description here of Jan. This is what she does as the Spiritual Life Director for Westminster College. Jan works in collaboration with the students, the Student Life Office, faculty, and staff to serve the student's spiritual needs. She focuses on three levels: individual spiritual growth, interpersonal relations, and increasing interfaith understanding for living in a global, multicultural, and multi-faith world. She assists faith, specifically, and interfaith campus clubs in their activities, as well as plans and promotes dialogues, serves events, retreats, and conferences. I would say that's what she does, but it's not all of what she is. I've known Jan Saeed for at least 15 years, and I got to know her because of her community-building experience in Salt Lake City. It's not uncommon to see Jan Saeed working side-by-side with many different faith groups, trying to create bridges of deep understanding. But it's not just within inside of the faith groups that she does her work. Jan Saeed is also doing work on racial reconciliation, on human divisiveness. She is there when there's a cleave in our social system, which is breaking down. And Jan, through her commitment and practice, is one of the true community builders of Salt Lake City. She's one of our gems. And I'm glad to be here to watch her moderate a panel, because I think this is when Jan's at her best, when she's working with emerging leaders as they are beginning to inspire our communities to build more just societies for all of us, not just some of us. And with that said, I'll turn the time over to Jan, who will be moderating our panel. Jan?
Thank you, Keila. We have a very rich group of gems in Salt Lake City that are working on these kind of projects. And it really has been my pleasure over the years in Salt Lake City for over 30 years to work with different individuals and groups to create, and as Keila said, community build. That we have that process of being the change we want to see in the world. I just came back from India, and we had a project at Westminster College called the Y, Westminster Library and Literacy Project. And to see the 12 students from Westminster College working together with the Indian community, from the children in the slums and their families to the doctors, lawyers, librarians, professionals in the community that are creating change in their community and coming back here to be a part of a panel to facilitate these young leaders leaders of change and community building. It's certainly my pleasure to be here with you tonight. And to also look out to see not only Kilo here in the audience with us, to hopefully have some time to ask questions of these up-and-coming community builders, but also to the rest of you that many of you I've worked with over the years, and hopefully in the future, those of you that I haven't, that we will continue to have this process. This time frame here of September 11th, a 10th year of really a devastating community-changing event that we're commemorating with this educational opportunity at this library, is a time of hopeful change and looking forward. And certainly it's with the youth of our society that we turn for the great brilliance of what will be coming in the future. I'd like to turn the time over to them, and so I will go down the line here, if we may, and have them each, starting with our first question of the evening, on this topic of the role of youth in building a pluralistic society, the big and difficult question of what is your name? Where do you go to school? And what are you studying? As well as this, they have this question in front of them, so hopefully my multiple question here will be okay, and I might address it to you if you have skipped one of these, like, 10-pronged points of this question. But where also, so this is kind of a little bit of a history of who you are at this old age that you have acquired and in your great leadership, that what's your, where are you from and what are you studying, and also what is your faith affiliation? And finally, what organizations that are in a pluralistic nature are you a part of? Now, at this point in this first question, I don't want you to go into any detail of what you're doing with those organizations, but just to give our audience a feel of what areas you are serving in and you're working, but please don't tell them all the secrets of that work, just your name, where you came from, what you're studying. Thank you. Can we begin at my right?
Yeah, so my name is Anwar Arafat. I'm not related to the famous Arafat, but the name is Palestinian. I actually graduated from the University of Utah about 2 years ago, and I studied film. I belong to the Muslim faith, and part of my experience in college was that I was a member of the Muslim Student Association, and currently I serve as one of their advisors. And I'm also a member of the Islamic Society of Greater Salt Lake, and I serve as one of the chaplains at the local mosque here downtown Salt Lake.
My name is Salma Safiullah. I go to Highland High School, and I hope to study medicine in the future. I'm Muslim, and a few of the programs that I'm part of is Shalom Salam Tikkun Olam, which is a Jewish and Muslim collaboration. I'm also part of the United Service of Humanity, which is helping the homeless. And also, I've been part of a choir where Jewish and Muslim children get together and sing songs. So.
Hi. I am Brina Apineru. I am a senior at West. I plan on studying psychology. I was going to tell you my schedule because, like, it's high school. We have, like, what, 10 classes. But I am Mormon, but I am open to other religions. I also believe in what other religions believe in. It's not just one. I don't like to be labeled as just one belief. As of now, I am part of the NeighborWorks Salt Lake team. And yeah.
My name is Samuel Jones. I go to Ames Academy for Math, Engineering, and Science. I'm affiliated with the Neighborhood House and the Inclusion Center, and I was actually wrote down my schedule too, but I hope to study philosophy and psychology in the future. That's it.
My name is Kim Cheney, and I attend Westminster College. I'm a senior studying business marketing and minoring in sociology, and we have like 4 classes in college, so I might beat you with your 10. But I am a member also. I'm LDS. I'm a Mormon, and I'm a member of the LDSSA Club on campus, as well as the Griffins for the Greater Good, which is a collaborative faith group.
My name is Sarah, and I am currently going to Westminster College studying English and minoring in theater. I grew up in Park City, Utah, and I'm Jewish, probably one of three Jewish kids who went to my high school. And the group and the organization that I am currently a part of, I'm the president of Hillel at Westminster for Utah, and we're the only Hillel currently in Utah right now.
Thank you. So, you have met the panelists. They are affiliated with a few of the universities and a few of the high schools in our valley, so they're just a very small cross-section of who we are. And what they will be sharing with us today will be their perspectives and their point of view. It will not be what every person of whatever faith they are or whatever high school they are believes. So I hope as you listen and truly try to hear what they mean by what they say, that we can be open that this is just one perspective of a person with this label. Whenever we do discussions with labels, I always get a little bit worried that we all think that that is the authority on this. Of course, when people are younger, we give them a little credit that they still have much to learn. As we become older, we sometimes put that hat on that we are the authority. And yet, I think if we all take the hat of being a community of learners, a community of builders of a new society, then we can accept that these are each individual perspectives. One of the things that I studied in college was consultation. And one of the spiritual quotes that I love about this is to think of consultation as a process of true consultation being spiritual conference in the attitude and atmosphere of love. That if we're here to consult to find a better way, we have to come with an open heart, and we have to come with listening to learn and not to judge. So, as we listen, I hope we will all gain a new perspective and some learning. The question number two. What experiences as a child affected you regarding diversity and the need to develop a more pluralistic society? What experiences as a child affected you regarding diversity and the need to develop a more pluralistic society? Feel free that you share more than one story if you want. You can each take 5 minutes or a few minutes to share this. Who would like to start?
I can start. My mom is from Mexico, and as a child, we'd always go there every year, and that's like the first thing I can think of that has to do with this, but I remember distinctly when I was way younger, and I saw kids playing soccer on a beach, and I really wanted to play, so I ended up joining them, and it's like kids are kids anywhere. They cherish the same things, sportsmanship and having fun in the sand, in the sun, and going to Mexico every year, I think, really gave me some perspective that, you know, that's what it is. But I mean, I learned a lot. Like I feel like I learned to be more family oriented from, you know, spending all the time in Mexico with my family, and that's what's made me want to develop a pluralistic society.
I guess I'll go next. Sabrina speaking. I went to Anytown Camp, the Inclusive Center, they hosted it, whatever. And I can honestly say it really changed my life. I know that sounds a bit dramatic, but it's really true. It opened my eyes on accepting people for who they are, like actually taking the time to get to know who they are and not automatically judging them by the way they look or the way they talk or where they're from or what religion they're from. It's changed who I am as a person, and I feel like that has an effect on people. So I can't expect the world to change, but unless I change myself, I'm pretty sure that'll touch in someone else and help them want to make a difference. So I encourage you to tell your kids to go to any town. I'm an any towner, a proud one. And yeah, that's my pluralistic society story.
What did you do at any town that was especially?
We did a lot. There were exercises that they were a bit dramatic and very intense. But you learn to be patient, and I guess it's the stuff that I tend to avoid. It was just like, I see it happening, but I don't want to, I don't know, stand up for it or point it out because I feel like I'm out of place. But I am human just like you, and just because we're not blood related, I still have that relationship because we are both human. And so I feel the feelings that you're feeling. I see the feelings that you're feeling. So I can actually stand up for you or let you know that I'm here for you if you need someone. If you need someone to lean on, if you need someone to reach out to, if you need someone to talk to, I can be that person, whether, despite the fact that we don't know each other, it's just the fact that we're still human and I can understand. I don't know.
Okay, I think I can go.
Who's speaking?
Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
So I have one story. When I was in third grade, it was around the holidays, and everyone was making these little paper Santa Clauses with cotton as the beard, and like the arms would move, and I really wanted to make one, and I had actually started making one, but my teacher actually took my Santa Claus away and gave me a stupid little paper dreidel that I had to make. And I felt really targeted just by my teacher, my third grade teacher. And all that carried through all through my school years. I was called, or I was referred to as just the Jew. I had kids drawing swastikas on my math papers. I had kids slipping swastikas into my locker, and when I was little, I had little girls who would not play with me because I was Jewish. Their mothers had told them that because I was the Jewish girl in the class, they couldn't play with me. And being so targeted and so judged, I decided that I don't want other people to feel that way. I don't want other kids or other teenagers, anyone, to feel as targeted as I was. And so I wanted to make a more understanding and more accepting environment around myself because of that.
Wow. Okay. I'll go next. This is Anwar, by the way. So I was born in Ogden, Utah, and I think I'm the first or only Muslim to be born in Ogden, Utah. I don't think I'm the only one, but maybe the first. I haven't met anybody yet, you know, born in Ogden who's also Muslim. There are maybe a couple now since, you know, Muslims are I guess, growing in number. My mother grew up in Orem, Utah. She was a Mormon girl. And growing up, her family started experimenting, I guess, with other faiths. She became Baha'i for a while. They became agnostic for a while. So she explored. And I think that has carried over into my life, that when she met my father, who was Muslim at the time, she accepted Islam and decided to become a Muslim. But all throughout our upbringing, she kept on telling us, look, you know what I mean? There's other faiths out there. You have to be accepting of them, not judging. Just because you're Muslim doesn't make you better than everyone else and so forth. And I think that has affected me in the way that I, you know what I mean, see other faiths and other people out there. Another thing is, I wanted to share this story, and this is not mine. This is my wife's. She, in their elementary school, and this is, I guess, one of those cases where being politically correct can backfire. The school, up until that point, I guess she was in second grade or fourth grade, whatever it was, and the school said, we're going to stop celebrating Christmas because now we have students who are Muslim, you know what I mean, like my wife and her siblings who are in the school, and there were also some Jewish students there, and so they said, we're going to be politically correct and we're going to stop Christmas at school. And so they removed the Christmas tree from the lobby. They stopped giving out, you know, treats and candy. They stopped doing all the celebrations that they do. And because of that, a lot of the kids in the school started calling my wife, you're a Grinch. You stole Christmas. Because of you, we can't celebrate Christmas anymore. And now, because of the school's want to be politically correct, it actually backfired and it affected them in a negative way. And even though, I mean, at the time, my wife didn't mind Christmas. I mean, the same way she wanted to celebrate it just like everyone else. I mean, being in that holiday spirit, you see everyone around you, you do it. And our parents do the same thing. I mean, when I was growing up in Ogden, I remember singing in the Christmas choirs, you know what I mean, growing up, where we'd go out and we'd sing the songs of Christmas and stuff. And that's just out of being want to be included in something and being part of something else, you know what I mean, that we weren't bigoted or we want to seclude ourselves from society. But sometimes, you know, it can backfire. So that's my two cents.
Was your wife growing up in Utah as well?
Yes, actually, my wife, yeah. My wife, she is originally from Somalia. But they came here as refugees. She's now an American citizen. She's been here since she was 2 years old. So she's American just as much as I think anyone else. And she's sitting up there in the audience with my two-month-old son.
I guess I'll go next. So when I was younger, we would always play tag, just like every third grader would. And so a lot of the time I was it. And my name is Sama, and people would take my name and they turned it into Osama bin Laden. And so when I was it, they would always be yelling out, "Oh no, Osama bin Laden is coming. They're going to bomb us, going to kill us. She's a terrorist." And the first time they started doing that, it didn't bother me that much. But like every day when we played tag, they just kept on calling me Osama bin Laden, calling me a terrorist. And eventually a couple kids started believing that I was a terrorist. And it wasn't just in third grade. When I went into seventh grade, I was running for election or class officer with my friend. And everything went really smoothly until I got into the finals. And there was two other boys who were running against us. And they decided to do dirty politics, I guess. And they sent texts around the school and said, "Oh, Osama bin Laden shouldn't become president. They're going to bomb the school. She's a terrorist." And like in class, people, I would hear, like, notes would be sent to me saying, "Oh, you're a terrorist." I would hear kids whispering about me. And that just really affected me. Also, there was a girl who I hadn't been in contact with for a while, and she stood up for me, unlike a lot of friends who kind of turned their back on me and actually believed the rumors. She, even though I hadn't been in contact with her, she went to the authorities and told them what was going on. Unfortunately, there wasn't any actions made, but it really affected me in a good and bad way.
That's the second time that I've heard Salma's story, and I just want her to know that I think the world of her. She's an incredible young woman. Sorry. My family knows that I get emotional, and it's happening, but I'm good. Okay, so I'm going to break with tradition a little bit, and I'm going to talk about a story that happened a couple of years ago. And so it's not quite a child, but my family might say I'm childish, so same thing. But when I first lived in the res halls at Westminster, I was assigned to a room with five other girls, and I didn't know any of them before I went. And it turned out that all of us came from different faiths, different backgrounds. We were raised differently in different homes, different parts of the country, just about as different as you can get. And while I was bringing in my clothes to unpack, my roommate, one of them, saw my Book of Mormon in my room. And I was bringing in my clothes, and she confronted me in the kitchen, and she said, "Are you LDS?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And she got a little irritated and frustrated. And she explained to me that she had told the Westminster faculty who planned out housing, she had told them specifically that she would not live with an LDS member. She said that the way that she wanted to live her life, she didn't want to be living with an LDS person. She didn't want to feel like she was being judged or, you know, being looked down upon or frowned upon or anything like that. And I felt a little guilty. I felt guilty that I had been placed in this apartment-style housing with this girl, and that she felt so you know, strongly about not living with someone who was LDS. So time went on, and she got to know me as a person, and I got to know her as a person. And she turned out to be one of my best friends, and we are about as polar opposites as it gets. And I love this story because it shows that when you get to know someone for their heart and not for a label, like Jan was saying, you know, if you get to know them as a person and as, you know, who they are inside, I think that that's what's most important. And a year later, we weren't living together anymore. We were walking on campus together, and she talked about an experience she had had that weekend. She was hanging out with some friends, and some of them were talking about Latter-day Saints and just saying some different things, just their opinion on it. And my roommate, she stopped them, and she said, "You don't know that." She said, "I lived with a member. I don't know what my problem is today. I really apologize." Gosh. She said, "I lived with a member. I lived with a Mormon." And she was cool, and she related an experience that she had had with two of my good friends who also happened to be LDS, and kind of changed their perspective. And I think that's the point of this panel, you know, is to get to know each other for our heart and for the kind of people that we are inside, not for a label or who we are on the outside. So I'll stop talking, Jan, but that's my experience.
Thank you. Who has not spoken? Has everyone shared? Okay, great. I have another question for you. How do you view others that are different than you? And has this changed over the years? How do you view others that are different than you? And has this changed over the years? Who would like to start?
I can start. This is Anwar. I know that the common, I guess, perception is that Muslims might view everyone else as like the infidel and Allahu Akbar and let's go get them and stuff like that, what they show in the media and the news. But obviously that's not the case. Personally speaking, because I guess we can only speak for ourselves, half of my family is not even of the same faith that I am. And so that in of itself has allowed me, and I think, you know, shaped my perspective that, you know, in the end, even though our faiths might be different, we're no different. You know what I mean? We're all, I think, deep down inside, we're all the same. We want the same things. We share the same goals. I believe so. We have the same morals, I think, deep down inside as well. You know what I mean? The morals of kindness, of doing good, of propagating happiness. You know what I mean? That we all ultimately want to be happy in this life and in the next if you believe in one. So I think, you know, that's just my 2 cents worth.
So has it changed over the years? Or do you feel like
that's
what you were raised?
Been the constant, yeah. Yeah. I grew up that way. I'm still that way. I don't think I'll change.
Thank you.
I'm stubborn.
I'll go next. I was fortunate enough to be raised in a home with parents who taught me and my siblings to celebrate religion no matter where it stems from. They also taught us to judge a person based on their heart and not based upon a label or upon their religion. I think that my religion the way that I view people, it's greatly founded upon my beliefs. And I believe as I've grown over the years, I've become more aware that we are all different. And that's what makes this world so beautiful, is that we each have something different to bring to the table. So as I've grown older, I think that I've become a little less naive and a little more aware of the world. That's it.
This is Brianna speaking. How I view others. Well, my first question is like, I don't even know you, but I can get to know you, right? I guess my trick is to just make you either laugh or smile. And I am a goofy person overall, so it comes naturally, I guess. You can think my mouth. But yeah, I don't mean... different or not, I'm up to learning something new. So that's how I view others. There's nothing... I don't know, I love getting to know new people. I love to interact. I love socializing. I'm such... So yeah, that's how I view people. And it hasn't changed. I've been like this since I was little. Some people get annoyed by it, but it's me.
I guess part of that question, and if those of you that have already answered want to say something to this, is that did you ever fear the other, as we call someone that's different than us sometimes in society? That how do you view others that are different than you, and has this changed over the years? Did you ever fear the other?
No.
The three of you that have talked so far, it doesn't sound like you were raised, you were educated from a young age that not to fear.
I mean, I'd like to comment also that, like, I mean, I think there are other Muslims out there that share my view, even if they didn't have the diverse upbringing that I did. Because I was fortunate enough to grow up part of my life here in the United States, and then part of it I actually grew up in the Middle East, where the experience kind of changed. And we did experience somewhat the concept of the other, in that we were living in Gaza City. And if you've been listening to the news, you know what's going on over there. So, and there is somewhat of the othering of, you know, the other side of the conflict and stuff like that. But fortunately enough, there are a lot of educated, and I think the key is education, like you said, that the educated people out there, you know what I mean, that were living in Palestine and Israel, that they understand that, look, you know what I mean, just because there are a few that are nuts, and overbent on violence doesn't mean that everyone over there is the other. And I was fortunate enough to be, as an American citizen, I was free to travel between the territories. So we frequently visited Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, both the east side and the west side. And my dad was a businessman, and so he met plenty of Jewish people that he dealt with on a business level. And I can tell you right now, hands down, a lot of those people were the best people that my dad and me personally ever met. And we visited them in their homes, not only in the business level, and a lot of them were willing to outreach even, you know what I mean? Oh, you're a Palestinian. Because a lot of them don't frequent with Palestinians or Muslims, and Muslims and Palestinians don't frequent with a lot of Jewish people. So we were fortunate enough to have that experience. And I think a lot of the people that were able to mix and able to meet other people had that experience, whereas, you know, there were the people that all they saw were bombs falling down on them from airplanes or people blowing themselves up, and that's very unfortunate.
Add on to that. Now that I think about it, I guess what I did fear was like being accepted. If you would accept me for who I was. I was more than willing to accept you for who you were, but would you accept me? And at times, that made me insecure at times. I'm sure everyone feels that way, but that's what I feared, was if you would actually accept me or were okay with me. Or I always wondered what others are thinking about me. You could be smiling, but what's really behind that smile? Like, I'll admit, I'm wondering what you're talking about. Like, are you she talking about me? Yeah, I'm only human.
I'd like to add something. I think it's almost human instinct for people to start to judge others as soon as they meet them. And my friend was telling me that when you know three facts about somebody, somebody can immediately start to judge you and create their own facts or their own idea about you. So something that I've been trying to change over the years is when I meet someone, I try to completely stop that like ability to judge someone, because I think it's an instinct. You know, you meet someone and you start to think whatever about them, but I'm trying to stop, you know, stereotyping people, labeling, judging. I mean, it just comes a little naturally, I think. I mean, it's not like you start thinking bad things about somebody, but you definitely do start to create facts. So that's something I've been trying to do less. So.
I guess I'll go next. This is Sarah speaking. I was also raised in a family that brought me up to know that people are different, and that's the beauty in humans, is that we're all different, and to get to know people for who they are, not by what they look like or what they believe. And I always thought that, but I think I did have a fear of others because I didn't want to be judged. I didn't want to be labeled.
And so I usually hid who I was and what I believed because of that fear. And I think that's part of being young, definitely. And as I've gotten older and as I've met different people, I've learned to accept who I am and to be comfortable with what I believe and to outwardly broadcast. Yes, I am Jewish, and that's what makes me special and different. So, but and definitely now, I still believe that others are different, and I love that about people.
I haven't gone yet. I feel like with all that's been said and everything, like I feel like it's an I statement that I view others with a certain kind of, I think we all kind of do, is view with a certain curiosity, you know, like, oh, what makes this person tick, and like, what's this person interested in and stuff. But I feel like, I feel like that view's changed just kind of normally as I've grown up and how I've learned, you know, life lessons and stuff, and just learned about the world that, you know, we really are all special in our own way. And yeah, I feel like I've kind of just reiterated what everyone else just said, but yeah.
Thank you. Let's move to a new question then. Everyone has had a chance, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So, now more specifically to the diversity of who you are here at this panel. How has your religion, your education, your religious education played a role in how you view other people? How does your religious education play a role in how you view other people? So this is an opportunity to share a little bit about your specific faith upbringing. And again, realizing this is one person's perspective, that even though they are speaking from a faith-specific background, it may be very different from another person's experience. Who would like to start?
I would. I guess it has helped me. Everyone makes mistakes. I make mistakes. I will be the first to say I make mistakes. But you can't be forgiven. You can look to God to forgive you. And if you like me, it's because of the God that's in me that you are accepting. Sorry, that's okay.
I was doing
it all day. It's just in seeing that what Jesus, in knowing or after being told or believing what Jesus has done for us as people, it makes you want to become, or makes me, I want to become more like him. He is just, has that, you know, I don't know, he reached out to others. He helped them understand that you can be forgiven for your sins, but, you know, it doesn't give you an excuse to keep making it over and over again. You know, you make mistakes, but you learn from it, but you don't repeat it. And I guess that's how my religion has played a role in how I view other people. It's just understanding that they do make mistakes. They're not perfect. Nobody's perfect. And, you know, we all just make mistakes and just, yeah.
Thank you. So what other things has your religion played a role in how you view other people? How's your education in your religion?
I guess I'll go. This is Sarah speaking again. As a Jewish person, I believe that it's not, it's what you do that matters, not what you say. And I feel like that is a very core principle in Judaism, that it's what you do in the world that that really matters, not exactly what you say or that sort of thing, but that, yeah, that's what I think, and how I view, and so to bring that back to the question, sorry, basically I view others by what they do, not what they say, obviously. If someone
tells me that I'm awesome and that I'm the coolest person there, but then they talk about me behind my back, or they don't help me with something, then it's obvious that they're not really my friend. They're not really someone that I can trust. And I think that Judaism has definitely helped me with that.
I guess I'll go. I think Islam has taught me a lot on how to view other people. In the Quran itself, it talks about how Judaism and Christians are also part of like the true religions. And also Islam talks about how you should love your neighbors and love everybody around you, and just to respect everyone around you. So, yeah, that was my input, I guess.
I'll go. A key belief in the LDS religion is that we are all children of God. And so in this sense, we place a great value and importance on life and on people. And so because of my faith, I see my family and friends. I see my professors and classmates at school. I see bank tellers and people that I run into on the church as divinely placed instruments to help each other, to help us along, because ultimately we're all on this world to give back and to serve one another and to be happy. And so my religion, my faith, my beliefs has greatly impacted the way that I view other people, and the relationships that I have with them.
I'll go. Although I was raised Catholic, I don't feel like religion's played that big of a role in showing like how I view people. But I mean, maybe it has in ways I can't explain, because it's just it being part of my, you know, childhood and my upbringing. Maybe I just can't explain how it's defined how I view people. But I mean, for what I can tell now, I don't think it has. But I don't know.
All right, I guess it's my turn. This is Anwar again. A very nice, beautiful verse in the Quran that I can remember is that it says, "O mankind, we have created you from a male and a female," meaning Adam and Eve, "and we have made you into tribes and nations so that you may know one another. And that indeed the most honorable of you in the sights of your Lord is the one who is most righteous." What this basically means is that there are no racial boundaries. I mean, the only boundaries that are there so that we can get to know one another. The diversity is there for a reason, for the benefit of mankind. And I think, you know what I mean? Me as a Muslim, and I know a lot of my Muslim friends, try to apply that, you know what I mean, to the utmost of their capabilities. And another thing that I'd like to mention is that another thing that my faith teaches, or at least taught me to be more inclusive of others, is the issue of food. I think many of you have heard the term like halal meat. Basically what that means is that you can eat meat that has been slaughtered by a Muslim or a Christian or a Jew. And this was an advent later on in the lifetime of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, in order to set those people who have a rooted scripture-based faith separate than the pagans that were living in Mecca at the time worshipping idols. That it was to set them apart, that look, you know what I mean, you cannot eat the meat that was slaughtered for these idols, but you can eat the meat and you can eat the food of Christians and Jews because they're more similar to you. And that way it gives the chance when people sit on a table and they eat food together, there's more of a bonding that takes place. And I think that's very symbolic in the sense that we need to be inviting each other over for more food and eating together more often, because that just opens up, you know what I mean, people getting to know one another. And I think that's something very profound.
Has everyone shared? Would anyone like to add anything? How your religion played a role? Okay. What are the basic beliefs of your faith? Again, here's another very faith-specific. What are the basic beliefs of your faith that you would want someone to know if you only had 3 minutes to share with them? So, this is your opportunity to share the kind of learnings that you've had and what they came from in 3 to 5 minutes each. I can remember being at a conference once that was saying you should have a 1 minute phrase, a 3 minute phrase, and a 5 minute. That if you meet somebody in an elevator, the doors are going to close. They ask you, oh, really? You're such and such religion? What's that? And you only have from floor 1 to floor 3 to tell them what it is. And what is the essence of your faith in that one sentence? And maybe if you want to start with that, that one elevator floor.
That might answer. Be a slow elevator.
They want out. They're gone. And then move it on to the 3 to 5 minute. Okay. Who would like to start?
I'll go. Okay, 3 minutes, go. Definitely the first thing that I would want someone to know about Judaism is the phrase Tikkun Olam, which means to build a better world. Mm-hmm. This in Judaism is just one of the most important things. Me as a Jewish person, I've always lived by that. That's not just charity. It's not just giving money to someone. It's helping your fellow man. It's building a building for someone who needs a home. It's planting a tree in Israel or even in your backyard. Tikkun Olam is a very broad phrase, and I feel like that can definitely make the world a better place. Also, tzedakah is another phrase that we hold dear, or at least I do. It means justice and charity. By being charitable, you're giving justice to the world. You're providing something for someone who doesn't have that, and it just makes, it kind of evens the score. It makes things better. Also, the word chai, which means life. And Jewish people, at least in my family and in my experience, we love life. We love to enjoy life. We love to have a party, eat food. I mean, every Jewish holiday, and this is, goes back to the food thing, every Jewish holiday has food, and it is a key point in it, which is great. But yeah, chai. We think life is very sacred, and we take it very seriously. And we're not a evangelical religion. We don't try to convert. We think that everyone has their own opinion and their own view of the world and religion, and we respect that. Even though we're called the chosen people, it doesn't mean that we're special. It just means that we were given certain responsibilities by God. And I like to distinguish that, that we're not separate from you or anyone else. We have different responsibilities.
Thank you.
I guess I'll go. Rina speaking again. I come from a really big family. I'm Samoan. And a lot of Polynesian families are pretty big if you don't know. And we all have different beliefs. But if anything, we do believe in that there is a God. And we all are children of God. And that when we are together as a family, we do feel the spirit. We believe that it brings more, I don't know, that warm feeling, the more love that you just love, that you just want to have every time when you're with the family. And my family loves to do a lot of things together. And when one likes to go away, we kind of pick on them like, oh, she thinks she's all that, blah, blah, blah. We're just like, no, we can't let her go. And so I believe that it's all about family. I mean, you keep your family close and you don't let go. Like, friends come and go, but your family will be there no matter what. They're going to be there to back you up from day one to the day you fall. They'll be there to pick you up. And, yeah.
Although I don't have a religion, I can give you my beliefs, but I actually wrote a sentence that I could build off of. I put, we are all made from the stuff of stars, and we're all a part of the cosmic being known as the universe. And I like to think of it as like, if the universe was a being with a consciousness, we're all part of that consciousness. And I mean, you could think of it almost like age groups, like different levels of consciousness, but I mean, if I could explain in 3 minutes, although I could probably do it in like less than one, in like 10 seconds, is that we're all part of this universe, and we're all, you know, part of the, we're special because we're part of this earth. We're part of a global consciousness. And until we find life on other planets, I mean, we're earthlings, so that's pretty special.
Can I ask the audience a question?
Has everyone finished the question on the panel first?
No.
Why don't we continue the panel first? And we will open up to the audience after we've had each of you answered a fair number of questions.
Okay. Well, it was part of my 3 minutes, but that's okay.
Okay, certainly. No.
You can go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't know. My 3 minutes start. Just kidding. So as LDS members, like I said before, we believe that God is our Father and that we are His children. We believe that Jesus Christ is His Son, that He's the Savior of this world, and that He came to this earth, and that He atoned for the sins, all of our sins, and He atoned for my sins so that I can return and live with Him. We believe that Joseph Smith saw God the Father and His Son, and that through the power of God, He translated the Book of Mormon, which we believe to be the Word of God, along with the Bible. We believe that God speaks to the prophets today, Thomas S. Monson, just like He did speak to prophets of old. And just like was said earlier, we believe that families are core and that they can be together forever. And that's my 3 minute spiel.
But you probably have a few more seconds if you want to go on.
I can do that. Maybe not. That'll be my 3 minute spiel.
So wouldn't it be nice if everyone is concise when they're asked to do? Sometimes I know that we get overwhelmed when people start talking about their religions, but I think the young have such a conciseness in how they will address things, which is also beneficial to building community, I think. Anyone else to share on this question of the basic beliefs of your faith?
I'll go. So if I were to explain someone Islam in 3 minutes, I would first of all say that Islam means surrender to God. It's a very peaceful religion, and it teaches good family values. There are 5 pillars of Islam. The first is Shahada, or that we believe in one God and the Prophet Muhammad is His messenger. The second is that we fast during the holy month of Ramadan. The third, we give zakat or charity, and usually that's 2.5% of income. We have to pray 5 times a day, and once in our lifetime, we have to make our pilgrimage to Mecca for our Hajj.
Very good. So it's my turn. So yeah, back to, this is Anwar again. Usually my 3 minutes starts with asking the person, what do they think? And obviously this question is off limits for Muslims, but I want the audience, I want to see what their feedback is. What do they think the most important idea or concept or issue is in Islam? It's paramount. And every Muslim knows this. They can, you know what I mean, like that, tell it to you. It's not something that they have to think about. Usually speaking, if they're educated, but sometimes they don't know.
It's devotion and obedience to God.
Yes, that's part of it. That's one aspect of it, but that's, thank you for that. He said it was, you know, devotion and obedience to God. And like I said, it's part of it, but there's actually something more profound. Does anyone know? No one knows. Definitely. Oh, no, that's definitely part of it. I'm not, you know what I mean? I cannot disagree with that at all. That's definitely correct. But there's still one singular thing. I'll go ahead and say it. It's actually the belief in one God. That's it. It's called monotheism, or we call it in Arabic, tawhid, which is, she kind of stole my thunder, and I thought people would catch on it from what she said next to me, Sama. But she said, when she said that there's belief in one God, we believe in it, you know what I mean, in that concept, in that God is unique. There's nothing like Him. He's the creator, the sustainer. Nothing of His creation is like Him. even our imaginations are his creation, time and space and so forth. So it's an overwhelming idea of God. And then we believe that any person who has this belief will ultimately be saved, regardless of whatever else will happen. And so that just, you know what I mean, the admitting, and that's why it's called Islam, is that you submit to that idea. That's it.
I'd like to add, there are, I'll just start with this. I have Charlie Chaplin here, but the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men and you, the people. And for me, as you're saying, God is within us all and stuff, and I feel like that's the universe, and we're all part of the universe, and the kingdom of God is within all men. The universe is within all men. We are all the universe. We are, you know, also, like, it's fascinating to think that we're identical molecularly and stuff, but, I mean, we all look so different, and it's just fascinating. That's all I wanted to add.
There's some pluralism going on in this creation, it seems, from a scientific and a spiritual means. Thank you for sharing. Everyone shared what they wanted on this topic. So now everyone has received a teaspoon of understanding of these beliefs. So I just want to ask this question without an answer of, did you hear things that were similar to your own beliefs when you heard others? Were there things that resonated, maybe with a little bit different wording or sentence structure, but they were similar to what you believe? Education. What do you do, back to our panel? I have about three more questions that I will ask the panel, and then I would like to open it up to questions from the audience to the panel as well, and if there would want to be some sharing. But what would you do on a daily basis to make more accepting, pluralistic world? What do you do on a daily basis? So this is now moving from how you were educated, how you were raised, to what are you, the doing and being of who you are. And not necessarily to go into what groups you're involved in, but this is interaction because of based on your great raise, your growing up years, your education, spiritual education, how do you act in an interpersonal experience because of that?
One thing that I do is, if you were to look at my group of friends, you would see that it's a really diverse group of friends. And if I were to, like, list, I don't know, my main group of friends, you would see that, like, each of them are from a different culture and a different religion. And I try to know people and get to know their backgrounds and culture so that I can understand people, I guess, on a different level and just get to know every culture. And I don't know. Yeah, I guess that's what I do.
I'll go. Well, first, I love my school. I mean, it brings in kids from all over the valley, and I feel like I have a lot of friends. Oh, we also have foreign exchange students, and so I have all kinds of friends from all kinds of different places. But I think on a daily basis, I try to cross the lines between generations and stuff. I go to this I mentioned before, neighborhood house. It's an adult daycare. And I spend time with elderly people who all have a form of dementia, and I feel like I've learned a lot in how different generations are kind of brought up, and there's barriers between generations that just like almost invisible barriers. And I feel like, well, I almost just answered like the last question, so I'll stop there. But I feel like daily, that's how I kind of do it, is I spend time with younger people who are around my age, who are from all around the valley, and I spend time with people who are, and I have a friend who is literally 102, so, yeah.
Nice. This is Anwar again. One of the things that I think I do, and my wife does as well, is that we just keep an open mind, in that You know what I mean? In the daily interaction, you know, my wife, she puts on, you know, the headscarf and she dresses modestly. And that does get stares and that does get people who ask questions. Usually, I can tell you overwhelmingly, you know, the questions have been positive, and that so we always have to be ready to answer, I think, and also ask the other people, because I think it's very rude if they just ask and it's a one-sided conversation. They ask, oh, why do you wear that? Where are you guys from? And we're like, well, we're from Salt Lake. Really? No, you're not from Salt Lake. What are you talking about? People from Salt Lake don't dress like that. And so we have to educate them. We're like, no, this is our home. We plan on living here. You know what I mean? We're raising our kid here. You know, this is something that we chose to do. I mean, one time my wife was walking around and an elderly lady came up to her and is like, because she was wearing her headscarf, she's like, it's okay, dear. You don't have to wear that here. This is America. You can take that off. And my wife explained to her, I was like, no one forced me to wear this. I wanted to wear this. In fact, you know, she wore it early on despite her mother telling her, no, you're too young to wear it now. She wanted to. She wanted to express the fact that she was Muslim. She was of a certain background. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think having that in mind, and it also applies to us, that when we see people that are different to us, I like to tell my wife, look, you know what I mean? We can't just stare at people, you know what I mean, without going up and asking them, hey, where are you guys from? What's going on? You know what I mean? What do you believe in? Why is it that you do this thing that it is that you do? And so that's something that we like to do.
I'd like to follow that. In my class today, I had a professor, and she said that intolerance stems from insecurity. And that really struck me. And I think it goes right back to what Omar was just saying, that, you know, when people, it's humankind nature to be curious about people who are different than you. And I think that, kind of like what Sarah was saying earlier, the best thing that we can do is to be proud of who we are. And when people ask questions, to address those questions and to not feel attacked and to not go and attack them, but to share insight and to share your beliefs and to have them share their beliefs and their insight, which I think just creates it creates bonds and it creates friendships and it creates understanding, which I think makes a better overall pluralistic world. Another thing, I feel like a broken record, but I think that one of the biggest things that I can do in my personal life, just being a college student, is seeing people for who they really are and for the actions that they make and that they do, not for what they profess to believe or what they say, but to see their actions and to see who they really are and in their heart, who they are as a person.
I'd like to say something. I definitely would agree with everything that's already been said about having an open mind and treating people as just people. I'm fortunate enough to be a children's librarian at the main library, and if a child walks in, he or she is just a child, and I'm more than happy to give them information. I don't treat them any differently by how they look or by what they believe. If they want information, I'm there to give it to them, and it's the most rewarding experience to me is to give information to them. I had a child come up and ask me why I didn't celebrate Christmas because I had told her I was Jewish. And I got to explain to her all the different, you know, aspects of being Jewish, and she shared her own beliefs, and it was really nice to have a dialogue. And I think that's really important, is to have dialogue between different people and to know who they are and get to learn different things about them.
I kind of forgot something that kind of would have gone along with my beliefs, but I guess I can kind of, yeah, BS it in here, but I feel like laugh it up. But I feel like I seek out the universal language, and that we all can, you know, before there was ever language, there was communication. It's, you know, it's in the purest form. Just, you could think of it as almost love. Love, you don't need words for it. You know, it's part of the universe. Has anybody read The Alchemist? It would make a lot more sense if you read The Alchemist. But I also think that there is no one truth, and we all need to seek our own truths. And for me, it's the universal language. And The Alchemist is an awesome book, so if you haven't read it, you should read that book.
So what do you mean by the universal language?
Well, I think the best way to explain it is like just like love. I mean, when you feel a strong connection with somebody, there aren't words for it, and that's the universal language in its purest form, I think.
I'll go. What I do on a daily basis to make a more accepting, pluralistic world is I'm basically learning about it. I work with NeighborWorks Salt Lake, and I pretty much started at the bottom and made my way up to where I'm at right now. And basically, my main job is still to set a good example, or just to lead. And it's kind of difficult because I'm working with teens. I'm a teen myself. How am I supposed to know how to lead these? Like, teens are very difficult. I'm difficult. And we are all so hard-headed, and we all come from different backgrounds and different beliefs and different, we're just so different. And so if we actually step up and actually accept or open up, then I guess it'll make it a lot easier, but it takes time, which we don't want to accept. Like, we have to learn to have patience and to actually take the time to actually, like, okay, I understand you. And I, like I said, we're teens, so we're like, no, I don't have time, or we should be all sassy about it. But that's what I do. I work at NeighborWorks, and that's what we do. It's a learning experience every day. We learn new stuff. At the same time, we learn how to build social skills, and I guess that's what I do on a daily basis, just learn. Yeah.
Great, thank you. Learn. Excellent advice to all of us. Okay. I think we've had a lot of great tips on how we can change the world and create a building, a pluralistic society. I've heard things like Tepgunalam and Sadaka, the justice and charity, less prejudice, educational opportunities that we need to have, difference is good, what we do and not what we say is more important, that we're all part of this global consciousness. To have friends that are diverse helps us learn. If we have a friend that's 102, do we have open minds? I've been learning a lot from you tonight. I want to continue to learn, however. So, a few more questions before we open up to maybe some more questions or just comments from the audience as well. So what are you doing with the groups you're involved with? Some of you have shared a little bit of that, but I want you to go into a little more detail of how that experience of the groups that you're involved with, that you are really seeing that you create change in your world and those that you interact with. So what groups are you with now? Now you can talk about it. In our first question, I said just mention, but now this is your opportunity to share and maybe encourage others to be involved with the same kind of groups that you're involved with. What are you doing? Go ahead. Who wants to start?
I will. I already talked a lot about the NeighborWorks, but what we do is it's like community-based. We are involved in the community, and we do a lot of community projects, and I feel that's like, for a teen, that's like the biggest change I can make is in my community, and then it'll go on from there, like community to the world, blah, blah, blah. But we did this painting under the overpass down by West. I'm not good at streets. I'm like more like the landscape. It's like by this and that, but yeah. It's called Mother Nature. It's really beautiful. You should go see it. And we worked so hard on it. So please don't judge us. But and we also, like, it's also a prevention program at the same time where we give these kids, like, stuff to do, like construction, for instance. And just to keep their mind busy, to avoid that. At the same time, we give them this lesson sort of called keeping it real, to help them, to let them know that you can say no. Like, you might feel peer pressured just because your friends are doing it. You don't have to do what they're doing. It's okay to say no. You can stand up for what you believe in and not have to go with what the trend is or what everyone thinks is cool. No, you just be yourself, and that's all that matters. I'm
done. So where is this mural that we should all be seeing?
It's by West. Oh.
By West High School?
Yeah, it's like a bridge. Okay.
Under one of the viaducts or on a bridge overpass? All right, Mother Nature on one of the bridges. We're looking for it.
It's a picture of a naked lady. Look past the fact that it's a naked lady. But it's really cool. You should see it.
It means Mother Nature. Is that what you're saying?
So.
Okay. All right, we'll be looking for it. Who's next?
I'll go. This is Anwar again. So I am still, I guess, a little active with the MSA, although not as much as I was since I graduated. But I was president for 2 years, and then I was, you know, a member for the other 2 or 3 years that I was in college, or even more, I don't remember. But part of what we did was we had awareness weeks and awareness months where we would host panels. We also were part of the Interfaith Council that was on campus, which represented about 7 other faiths. And we would host events together similar to this in order to basically just educate people on who we are. Because, I mean, to tell you the truth, there's a lot of ignorance out there. There are a lot of lies. There's a lot of propaganda. Whether it's politically motivated or whether it's ignorantly motivated, you know, I mean, there's a lot of misconceptions, and not only about Islam. Obviously, Islam right now is in the spotlight due to what's going on in the world. But there are other faiths out there that I think are just as misunderstood, if not more. And we need to help each other as faith groups to unite, to get those misconceptions out there, and to talk about what unites us and not what divides us more. So that's part of what I did with the Muslim Student Association. Now I'm more involved with the more local community that's not too much student-based. I mean, personally, I teach classes twice a week at our local community center for the local youth, and they're usually high school students and college students themselves. And I teach them about, you know, I mean, Islamic principles, obviously, but also more about, you know, being more tolerant and understanding and accepting. And what does it mean to be a Muslim living in America? How do you juggle those things? What do you do, when you feel, you know, I mean, that there is some bigotry happening. And this could be happening from people, and it could even happen by law enforcement. You know, I've had my share of law enforcement encounters, and I'm no longer randomly searched when I go to the airport. I'm actually on a list. I'm searched every time, basically, going through. And why that is, I have no idea. I keep on asking them. They don't know either. I just go with it. And that's one of the realities of being a Muslim in America. But then there's also the reality of that there are people in law enforcement who don't want to do that. I mean, some of the police officers that I was with, you know what I mean? Because the TSA, they got me, they keep on searching me and so forth. And I think one of them called police officers. This is the last time I traveled. And the policeman came over and like, hey, dude, you know what I mean? We know what's going on. It's completely fine. In fact, we'll escort you. We'll, whatever you need taken care of, we'll do it for you. We don't care. A lot of these people, they work too many hours. They might, you know what I mean, have seen something that set them off. We don't see anything. You're completely fine. So some of them were nice. Some of them weren't, you know, that's something you have to deal with. So I kind of went off topic, didn't I? But that's okay.
Well, let's see how we can tie that into the topic. What are you doing and involved to create change in the world? If you stay calm when people are doing those kind of
exactly.
things.
Well, I mean, the TSA agent, I mean, the police officer said, you look nervous. And I said, I've been traveling for 36 hours. I haven't slept. I haven't eaten. And this is the third time I've been asked crazy questions like, have you gone to any training camps in Afghanistan? I'm like, I haven't even been to Afghanistan or even that side of the world. You know what I mean? And they ask you questions like this just to provoke and you know, you have to stay calm. Obviously, I was, but my eyes were bloodshot. I mean, I was awake for 36 hours, loaded on caffeine. And so the police officer came and was like, don't worry about it. I'll buy you some donuts or something. So, yeah, we went.
I have stories from there, too, just because with my green eyes and Swedish background and the name of Said.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And if you Google your name at a certain time in history and you're hopping on the airplanes and someone that sells arms in Pakistan has your same name, you end up for an hour or two in New York trying to come into the States after you've been to a peace conference in another part of the world. So, yeah.
It's all of us.
We have stuff to work on, for sure. Thanks for sharing. Okay, anyone else on that topic? How are we creating change with those that we interact with the groups that you're involved with?
I'll go. This is Sarah speaking. So I'm president of the Hillel at Westminster for Utah, and we're a brand new club. We just started it last year, but one of the main goals that we have is to build a community, and I know this has already been said, but in Judaism especially, community is huge, and I don't want students to walk across campus for 4 years and think they are the only Jewish kid on campus, which happened to one of our members. So we want to let other Jewish students know that there are other Jews in Utah, and we're here, and there are places that are welcoming for you, and that you can participate in your religion. But we're also really looking forward to bridging out our community and reaching out to other students. We love it when our members are not Jewish, because then we get questions and we get other people, you know, wanting to know about Judaism or Hillel, and the free food is definitely a very good, you know, tactic to get non-Jewish members in and Jewish members. But, you know, when you're away from your parents in college, just having someone there who will give you a bowl of matzo ball soup, because that is really important to Jewish kids. We got to have our mother's matzo ball soup. And, of course, it's always shared to other people. And we had a community Passover just this past April where we invited everyone and anyone to participate in it. And we had faculty members, students, members of the community, Jewish and non-Jewish, which was really fun because you got to see the ways that people reacted to the Passover Seder. So it's education. We're educating a lot of the other students and just reaching out and building a community at Westminster and hopefully to different colleges, because, I mean, there's many, many opportunities at the University of Utah or anywhere. So that's what we're doing at Hillel.
With the LDSSA club, we also provide food, so it's to get people. There's one boy at Westminster, and he comes to all of our activities, and he's not a member, and we just love him. But one time his friend asked him, why do you go to all these Mormon things? Like, I don't get it. And he was like, there's free food. I'm a college student. So as you know, Jan is the director of the spiritual life at Westminster, and the Drop Project?
The Drop is in the spring, yep.
She's in charge of this large service project that every faith on campus is able to come and provide some kind of service. So, for instance, there's one group decorating boxes that the food bank will pass out food to different families in. And there's another group that's making flower arrangements that can go to an assisted living home. Just different little activities like that. Another one, they made little hats for premature babies that they could send the babies or have the babies wear when they were in the hospital. Anyways, so the point of this drop service project is to get all the faiths together and to just give all this service. And the cool thing about it is you don't stay with your group or, you know, your club. You interact with everyone, and it just becomes this big mesh of people trying to create that community that everyone feels welcome and feels a part of and is giving back to. So that's one thing I think that I've been involved with personally that I feel very fortunate to have been a part of.
I'll go. I'm part of the neighborhood house, and I feel like I what I do that helps create change is as I said, cross lines between generations. You know, they have these elderly people, they have like a hunger to be listened to, and it's really fun to listen to them, even if they'll say the same story twice. It's just as fun the second time, and it's just as fun repeating my story, you know. And like, I've just gained so much perspective. It's just ridiculous. Kind of almost went off on a tangent there, but another group I'm humbled to say I'm part of is the Inclusion Center, and hopefully Kilo will elaborate on that later, but I haven't actually been a part of it for too long, but they do all kinds of activities that are like, they just did this one called Drive Out Racism, which was a golf tournament that was, I'm sure you could elaborate a lot better than I could, but, and then they also support the Camp Anytown that me and Brina went to, and it's a great, great, or I almost said company, organization, place, sanctuary. They have other facilities at the Westminster College as well.
Okay, so I'm part of a group called Shalom Salam Tikkun Olam, and it's basically started out as a Jewish and Muslim collaboration. And now there's lots of religions who get together, and basically every Christmas we all get together and gather blankets, food, and just like basic necessities. And when like refugees come into Salt Lake City, we kind of give them a welcoming gift, and like just like a warm welcoming gift on the holidays. And it's really fun to be working with all the other religions. It's kind of like one big family, and you get to make a lot of new friends. At the same time, you get to meet a lot of new people who are coming into Salt Lake City, and you get to just give them a gift. And then I'm also just recently started working with United Services for Humanity to fight hunger. And basically, you just go to homeless shelters, and we prepare a dinner for the homeless every a couple nights per year and on holidays. And it's really fun to just give people a dinner every night. And yeah.
Sama, the first group that you're involved with, the one that gives presents to the refugees and things, the groups that are sponsoring that at a Christian holy day are not Christian, majority-wise. Can you
No.
Who are those two groups that are basically spearheading that project that
Muslim,
go on Christmas and deliver presents?
Yeah, it's Muslim and Jewish people who mainly do it. But, I mean, we all have to live together, I guess, and celebrate each other's fun things, you know.
Huge warehouse full of all kinds of things, and people from the whole community are invited to help. And I had the honor of being there 1 year too, and enjoyed it thoroughly.
It's really fun.
Along that line, when I was younger, I got to participate in that program, and the first interaction that I ever had with a Muslim person was this girl who was my age, and we both got assigned to give out children's toys for the homeless. And we were both really nervous because I could tell that she had never really interacted with a Jewish person either. And but we got talking, and we got more comfortable with each other, and we became friends, and we were just so excited to give these presents out. It wasn't about how different we were. It was, now we're going to be friends, and we're going to do something that is going to make a little kid just so happy.
Any other comments on that point? All right, then we'll move on to our second to last question. So you've been busy. You're doing things. You've been changed. You have changed the world in your small way, and possibly in a very great way and even greater to come. Do you see your role at this time period and as this generation as a different role than the previous generation in regards to this issue of plurality or pluralism in society? Do you see your role different from your parents?
I think that, like, going back to my story about being taunted and called Osama bin Laden, in seventh grade, the rumors were mainly spread around by text messages. And I don't think that could have really happened in my parents' generation. But, yeah, I guess the rumors were just spread faster, and everybody got the rumor from the text message. And I don't think that technology was around then. And also there's, like, a lot of Facebook groups, I guess, that you can join. And I learn about a lot of the things that I do from the internet. And, yeah, a lot of the things that I currently do, I've read about on the internet, and that's what got me interested. So.
So when you sent these questions out, this was, like, the most complicated question on the list. I, like, looked over it, like, so many times. It's like, but I guess. But it wasn't really, like, how. It was just, I guess it's just different from, like, oh, the only thing that mattered was what you did. Like, you were supposed to do the right thing. You know right from wrong. Diversity-wise, like, I don't think it's anything different. I think it's still the same issues now as compared to them. I don't think it's that. I don't think it's as, I don't know, as bad as it was back then. But it's still there. It hasn't gone anywhere. It's just not as bad as back then, yeah. But it's just now, I believe, it's just the individual. Like, as an individual, you know right from wrong, and or I taught you well, and you should know what to do, and I don't know. I still think it's complicated, so there's my complicated answer.
So I wonder if I should try to clarify what I was meaning by that question, or... do you see your role different at this time period than the generation before? I think Osama mentioned a little bit of that, that we have text, we have internet, we have the tools of communication on a global level that when I was your age, we didn't have. And when I think of my parents' age, one more generation beyond, the television and the radio were things that were new. So we're living at three generations of a mind-boggling interconnection of the global consciousness or global society that has been mentioned tonight. And in that fact that we are so interconnected now, that text messaging happens in seventh grade, where nobody had phones in their hand, let alone you had to go to a payphone where you put a dime or a quarter in it. And this generation doesn't even, you know, you look at, if there's an old one in an old movie, it's like, what was that for? Because we all have our little phones in our pockets that we're asked to turn off at the beginning of a gathering like this. Since there's such an interconnection on a global level that even governments cannot block it out to the level that they wish they could, do we have an ability to change the world on a global level more readily than maybe your parents did?
I think we definitely do. This is Anwar. That in the sense that, you know, the internet not only offers you means of communicating with other people of other faiths, of other ideas, but reading about them also. Looking up information on the go. I mean, everybody has their iPhones and they're Googling away and finding out what, you know, a person says, oh, I'm Muslim. Okay, what is that? And then they Google it really quick and they find out. But I think there's a danger to that as well, in that the sense that people start basing what they know off of something that they read on the internet. And a lot of times that's not as accurate as actually meeting a person face to face. That's one of the challenges. I think another challenge is that the anonymous nature of the internet makes it very easy for a person to get dragged into perhaps the intolerance, the opposite, and the hatred that, oh, I can hide behind, you know, this username that nobody knows who I am, and I can bash whoever I want to bash just because I disagree with them or I don't see eye to eye with them. And there's a danger to that as well. So I think the challenge is definitely, yes, it's greater in our day and age in order to spread the message of tolerance and acceptance and, hey, look, not everything that you see, not everything that you read is actually correct, that we need to, I think, stop the technology a little bit and go up to the people, reach out to more people. I mean, I was fortunate enough to be in the mosque when we were visited by a church that was just four blocks away from our mosque here near Liberty Park. And they came in, the pastor and some of the other peoples that were in the congregation, they came in, and they came in after hours. I mean, our imam wasn't there. Nobody, there were just a few guys there, and they came in and were like, hey, we just wanted to visit to tell you guys that that crazy guy in Florida who's burning those Qurans, we don't agree with him. We think that, you know what I mean, this is wrong, and that we want to reach out and see, you know what I mean, what we can do. And so we kept in communication. We tried to, at least, and we still did, to communicate with these people and visit them and visit us and have mutual respect like that. And I think those are what's needed, you know what I mean, more so than just the speed of information, because information without action doesn't really do anything.
I'd like to follow that. I feel like, although we, as you know, in different generations, there's different issues in the world and there's different problems and the development of the internet and all that stuff, I feel that one role that hasn't changed, though, is that bringing up the next generation so that there isn't a wall of misunderstanding between the generations. And I feel like with all this technology, there really is a big wall between generations that is invisible, that we just, you know, it causes a lot of misunderstanding. And I feel, or where was I going to go off with this? But I don't remember. But I was going to read this part of this Charlie Chaplin speech that kind of, well, with my opinion on how the, or it's not my opinion, it's Charlie Chaplin's opinion. But in my opinion, I agree with that things have changed and our roles are greater, but I feel like there's still the same problems, you know, that have been around for all this time. Like, here, this will kind of explain it better. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life would be violent and all will be lost. The airplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for the universal brotherhood and unity of us all. And also with the radio and that, I think the internet has kind of done that same thing. It's brought us closer, but as you said, it really does. It can tear us apart just as quickly, and, you know, I don't know if I can follow Charlie Chaplin, but I feel like, you know, it's more than cynicism and all that kind of stuff. We really do need to look out for each other and hold the love of humanity in our hearts and, you know, hold strong to each other, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. I think I went off way too far off the question. It has nothing to do with the question, but
I think you did well with Charlie.
Yeah.
Teamwork.
I guess I'd like to add something. I definitely agree with what's already been said about how internet can bring us together, but it can also tear us apart. But I'd like to add a little story. I'm sure that some people have seen this picture on the internet. It's was taken off of Chat Roulette, which is an internet site that randomly takes a user and connects them with another user video chat. And there's this picture on the internet of a Jewish person with an Israeli flag on the back, and then another person who was a neo-Nazi with a swastika flag on the back, and they're both standing there or sitting there with their thumbs up and smiling, just like. And for that moment, they were connected and they shared something. And I think that even though they shared different opinions and completely differing ideals, that moment of them just being connected on the internet is worth it, in my opinion.
Anyone else want to add? That started earlier. everyone?
If you don't know what chat roulette is, I don't recommend checking it out.
You don't. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, please don't do it unless you've been warned or at least have someone to tell you what it's about. Because, yeah, thank you for that.
Little footnote.
It's not all sparkles and magic.
I think this is all very good guidance that we all take to heart, and I think the generation, your parents, are always wanting to look out for you, and it's great that you're looking out for them as they hop on the internet for this. I think every tool that we are availed by technology has both a good and the bad, and it is our conscience that allows us to use it for whatever we wish. A friend of mine was in my kitchen once when I was asking, you know, what is applied spirituality? How do you apply spirituality? It was a question in one of my master's programs. And I go, oh, how do I give an example of that? And he was saying, Jan, I'm sitting here in your kitchen with you, and you have all these knives, and you could do a lot of damage with these knives to me and to anything if you wished. But you know how to use them in a way that you make these meals that we all eat together and we have a great time. So a tool can be used for something that benefits society or it doesn't. And I think that from everything you've said, you're all giving us a warning. And I would say to add to that, that we have a responsibility of how do we use these tools at this time. Not that they're something we want to get rid of, but how do we use them in a way to benefit society? And I'm sure you all are. And maybe in the next part of this next question, you could even say, how do you use... Some of you mentioned that you use it to connect. You use it to find out information. You can Google someone at any second. And just as I Googled my own name after I came home from being detained, that, oh, there's somebody selling arms. Yeah, I maybe detained me too for a minute, but I'm glad that they let me go. So what do you hope to see in the world in regards to building a pluralistic society? And really, what is your role? What do you hope to see will happen in the world in regards to building a pluralistic society? And what is your role?
I'll ta-da, start.
This is your big shine, show the world what we can do moment.
Well... I was just going to say, ideally, people living for each other and, you know, mutual understanding, and hopefully we'll all reach a point where we're on a similar level of consciousness, and which is mutual understanding. So, like, yeah. I think you added kind of a sub-thing to the question, but I answered the original, I think, so that didn't make any sense. It did for me!
You know you can go anywhere you want with these questions. I am perfectly fine with that.
Okay, so when disaster strikes, and we've seen it all over the world lately, we see people come together, and they don't divide themselves by faith group or, you know, the way they look, anything like that. They come together, and they rebuild their community. And we see that same in people reacting to that, to the disaster, and trying to help. There's not a separation of faith or of geographical location. It's more people coming together to help and serve and aid. And this sense of family is what I would love to see in the world. It's breaking those barriers and those stereotypes that we have about each other, and really seeing each other as friends and as, you know, other human beings. We're all on this earth together, and we're all going through, you know, our own set of trials and things, and, you know, just loving and supporting one another in everything that we do, I think is what I would love to see happen in this world. And I think that to create this family, that each of us plays a role and we play a part, and I think that it starts with being aware of ourselves and what we believe and why we believe it, and then more than that, being aware of other people's beliefs and being willing to listen to them and to understand them. And we might not all agree with one another, but having that understanding that We're all entitled to have our own beliefs and our own way that we live. I think will help generate that family and that bond and that love that I think that we all should have as human beings.
And I can add to that, I guess. For me, and this may be too idealistic or too specific, but I'd like to see the innocence protected in that family. I feel that innocents are always affected by conflict, no matter what, and I'd like to believe that through pluralism and through getting to know different people and understanding that people can come together and protect those who really need protecting, and build a community that can help. Yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
I totally agree with Kim and Sarah. I myself can make a difference, but we can make a bigger difference if we as the world or as a family come together. We can make, it'll be even bigger. And family is huge to me, so that's all we can do, right? Is to just come together and help change things together, because that's what we need. Change for the better.
I think in this world, I think everyone should be allowed religious freedom, especially with what's going on today in the world. Everyone should be allowed religious freedom. And everyone should be friends. We should all be living peacefully together as if we're brothers and sisters. And we all have issues, but we should be able to solve these issues peacefully. I know it's cliche, but I really want to see in the future world peace. I hate violence and I hate war, and that's, I think, in the future, happening in the world, I want to see war just totally wiped out. So,
I think I'd like to start with saying how, at least reminding people how fortunate we are to be in the United States of America. A panel discussion like this, I don't think would be taking place probably anywhere else, maybe except of, you know, Europe and a few other countries. And so I think that in itself, we should be thankful for that. And that ultimately what I hope happens is that there's more, and I can tell you that this is a direct result of being more educated and more exposed to people of differences. And that's because America is a melting pot. I mean, it was bound to happen that this is, you know, the result of what happens when people mix with each other and they become more accepting. And obviously, you know, I hope our country doesn't take a U-turn in the opposite direction and start becoming more intolerant and so forth. I mean, just recently, in March, I think there were those King hearings by that congressman, and they were specifically trying to profile intolerant, you know what I mean, and target Muslims, that they would be able to do that legally by law enforcement. And that's obviously very unfortunate, very bad, and we hope that that does not happen, does not take place. Obviously, discussions like this show that there are people out there who do believe in pluralism, who do believe in acceptance, who do believe in accepting other people for who they are, for their differences, that they understand that the actions of a few do not represent the entire group. And I can tell you firsthand that people who have friends or acquaintances of specific faiths are very, very much more tolerant of that faith and of those people than people who have no idea, of other people out there. And so this is where it comes in, that we have to expose ourselves, I think. And as young people I know on this panel, I mean, college is one of the best experiences that I ever went through. If not for the fact, you know what I mean, that I was able to interact and meet people of different cultures, different ideologies, different backgrounds. And I'm very thankful for that. And that's an experience that I will cherish for the rest of my life. Unfortunately, we live in a time where, you know what I mean, intolerance does exist. I mean, just a simple fact, you know, that the shooter that was in Sweden, when he first came out, a lot of people thought that he was Muslim. And all the Muslims in that country basically went into their homes, shut their doors, and they said, okay, you know what I mean, the hammer's going to come down on us now. Somebody went nuts. And then when the assailant came out, they always called him an assailant or a perpetrator or something like that. He was never once called a terrorist, as if terrorist is a term that is only reserved for Muslims who commit acts of violence. And so that, even of itself, I mean, this is something unconscious people probably don't think about. But as a Muslim, I do. I think about it every day. I look at this and I wonder, how would it be different if this was a Muslim? How would it be different if he was a Mormon? Or if he was any other faith? But because he's of the faith of the majority, a lot of times that takes on a different nature. And so we need to be more tolerant, I think, and more educated, and meet other people and have friends and acquaintances that are different than ourselves.
I would like, yes, let's give him a round of applause. Yes, I want to personally thank each of you for sharing all of your insights on this topic with us, and I hope that you will continue to share with others and other communities throughout the rest of your life to create the change that we need to make in the world. Kilo, I'm wondering if you want to come and explain this little bracelet that I have put on the counter here for each of our participants, because this is one of the collaborations that Kilo and I have done on Westminster campus. I'm very pleased to have my office right next door to the inclusion office right now as well. They wanted, in conclusion, for us to share a few words about where we have come from in this process, and then we can certainly open it up if there is any time to the rest of you, too.
Sure. There was a project done between Jan and I, and it was just a simple bracelets we've been passing out to the community, and there's a very easy message on them. I guess it's easy for some and maybe more difficult for others. And it just says, be humankind on it. And I think it's really about how you do both, how you be human and how you be kind, and how do you place those two together and what that means for each of us. So Jan was gracious enough to bring out these bracelets and give them as part of the gifts to our panelists and maybe a reminder to them and to all of us about what we're trying to do on this rock that we call Earth.
And it's kind of like one of the logos of the Inclusion Center, which I encourage you all to learn a little bit more and go to the websites that the students have suggested, the ones that they recommended, and as well the Inclusion Center. At Westminster on the campus, one of the statements that many of them said is, how do we act our lives and to be versus to say? And this is a poster of the Golden Rule that we use on that I use with the Spiritual Life Office and give to students. As far as it has six different faith symbols, and next to them, the words of what has come to be known from a spiritual standpoint as a spiritual Golden Rule: to love thy neighbor as thyself, to make thine own self the measure of the others, and so abstain from causing hurt to them. Do not do to others what you do not wish done to yourself, and wish for others too what you desire and long for yourself. Choose thou for thy neighbor that which thou choosest for thyself. As ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. This is in every creed, whether it's religious or philosophical. It's in all religious creeds. And if we could do what we read and we say, I think we would see the changes in the world that we're all asking and hoping to see. When I was asked to facilitate this, I was also asked to share a little bit about my faith tradition, which I don't usually do. But in conclusion of this, I just wanted, since given that opportunity, I thought I would, as I am a member of the Baha'i faith and have come from a Christian background until first grade, where my family and extended family and three generations in the Northwest and Idaho became members of this religion, the Baha'i faith. And then I certainly met my husband through that, as he came from Iran, and I met him here in Salt Lake City. On 9/11, in September 2001, 10 years ago, my husband was in Seattle, and I was here in Salt Lake City, and we all watched, and we saw the towers coming down. And I thought of a history of a dear friend of mine who's much older, and she's Japanese, and she was put in an internment camp. And she used to tell me the stories because I enjoyed talking across generations, just as Sam had mentioned as well. And I was thinking of my husband, who is Iranian, in a place where they don't know him. He was at a conference. He's a businessman in the city here. And I called, or he was able to reach. We were able to call. He was supposed to fly home that day. And I can just remember feeling, would this country, because he's from Iran, we're not Muslim, but because of the stereotypes of our last name, would we be put in an internment camp? Would he be able to get home? He was with people from Salt Lake City that had known him for years, and he's in management. So I told him, stick with your buddies, you know, stay with those that know you. And he said he did get looks when he was walking in the streets trying to find a way home because the planes were all down as it affected everyone and it affected everywhere. He did make it home. They drove, as many people did, across the nation 10 years ago to get back when there were no planes to fly. There was a Father Michael Judge that was on Ground Zero that day. And in his pocket, he carried a prayer. He said, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I think of Father Michael today, and I think we honor him and those that died by moving each generation forward, that we can make a difference, that we're affected by the hurt and the pain, but we can make a change in the world. And by the people we associate with, the new friends we make, the understandings we gain. My one sentence about the Baha'i faith is, to be a Baha'i simply means to love all the world, to try to serve it, to work towards universal peace and universal brotherhood. I heard everyone on this panel say those kind of words, that we want world peace, that we want religious freedom. We want to create a bigger family, that we care about the whole world, not just our own personal family, that we can agree to disagree, that we can be there for one another. We come together. In the catastrophe of life, there doesn't need to be any separation. We're here to serve. And I think my last comment there would be that work is worship, if done in service to others. That what we do to serve others is a way of worshiping the Creator. And I think by even being here to share our knowledge, to learn, we have been doing a spiritual job tonight. And I thank you all for being here and being a part of this. I think we have a few minutes left. I don't know if Kilo, did you want to offer any more statements? Do any of you want to ask each other questions? I think we can open it that way, that the panel could ask questions of each other or anyone in the room if they would wish. You can try, and I will repeat it if it doesn't make it. Okay, there's a mic coming.
My English is not very good, so that's the reason why I chose the microphone. I have a comment first for these people here, so beautiful. To congratulate you for the... to express, you know, your spirit with all of us. I used to be like most of us, probably very... I had some against Jewish people, for example, but I learned my lesson. I was telling all the time, why these Jews like to kill so many, you know, Palestinian, all the things, you know. And then I met two friends that were Jewish. We became really good friends. They're my best good friends now. They said, that's not the way. That's what you see on TV, on the radio. But I have many friends that are from Palestinian. We are the best friends. We do business every day. And we love each other as any other friend. So that changed my life. And also, I have a question for course. And in order to tell my background, my name is George Riveros, and I used to be a journalist, but investigative reporter. So I always, when I hear something, you know, I would like to go deep and get from different sources until I find the truth most of the time. That's what I try, to get the truth. So in order that you were telling the last time about 9/11, I have a lot of information on that, and that's the reason why probably now I'm not an investigative reporter anymore, because I know too much. And my life was threatened, so I have to stop talking or writing about. But I just can tell you one thing. The terrorists that attacked 9/11, there were no Muslims, okay? There were people that are, some of them Christians, and some of them Jewish. There were no four planes like the media will tell us. There's only two planes, okay? I got the pictures. If somebody wants to see the pictures in the Pentagon or in Pennsylvania, there's no plane there. There are hundreds of questions, but my question will be for you that if you are, you know, so young now and ready to have probably in the future children, if you're going to have those principles, you know, are you going to be able to teach them to love, you know, your neighbor, no matter what religion, you know, they have? And probably your answer this time is going to be yes. I know that, like most of us would know, that I believe in God, of course, but we all here, all we are sitting here and listening to this is really great. I'm so sad that not too many people came by. I hope the next time we have some Native Americans too. I have worked with them. They're special people too. If you have that idea, you know, try to tell everybody else the real truth about the things, but that's my thing. Thank you again for this. Thank you for sharing those, you know, your feeling that come from your heart at this time. Through, you know, through your life and becoming older, you're going to be able to share other things that, in my case, I can share, but sometime at this moment, I have to shut up because I know
you.
Too much. Thank you again.
For your comments. And, I, you know, I do think there was a question there, if any of you wanted to answer as far as how would you raise your children to continue this process of how could you bolster this kind of an education. We really just have a few minutes here, so I'll let them try to answer if they wish.
Guess since I already have a kid, I can go. I know he's only 2 months old, but that's something that I think about on a daily basis. You know what I mean? How am I going to instill the qualities, the morals, the ideals that I have into my son? And I understand that, I mean, he's ultimately going to be his own person. He can choose to believe whatever he wants to. He can have whatever morals or manners or etiquettes that he wants to. But our job as parents is to facilitate, an environment of, like you said, education and exposure, that he's not only stuck, you know what I mean, in this small circle of common Muslims that he only knows. Or similarly, you know what I mean, if we're growing up Mormon, you know what I mean, you only have Mormon friends and Mormon people that you know. And so I'm going to try and expose him to as many different people, as many different cultures and diversity as possible, because I think always, you know what I mean, that will always, always bring about good things and not bad. So that's just mine.
Any other last comments or thoughts on the panel? You think your parents did a pretty good job giving you some opportunities, and then you took advantage. Well, again, if we could have a round of appreciation for the panelists. And I'd like to thank all of you for being here, and that applause was for you as well, because it takes all of us together to build this understanding and to create a greater sense of community building. Thank you for being here tonight.